Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. So we're reading from the seventh canto of the Srimad Bhagavatam, chapter 2, text 22. And I think it's up there. Nitya Atmaya Yasudha.
Nitya Atmaya
Yasudha. Sarvaga Sarva Vitpara. Date sva atmano lingam,
maya
visrijanganam, nitya atma vyaya sudha, sarvagha sarva vitpara. Date sav atmano lingam,
maya
visrijanganam. Somebody else want to chant? Nitya atma vaya sudha, sarvavit para. Tate savatmano lingam, mayaya visrijanganan, nitya atmana shudha, sarvavit para. Tate savatmano lingam, mayaya visrijanganan, nitya atmaya sudha, sarvaga sarvavitpara, ate savatmano lingam, mayayan visrijangana, nitya, eternal, atma, spirit soul, avyaya, inexhaustible, shudha, with no material tinge, sarvaga, qualified to go anywhere in the material or spiritual worlds, sarvavit,
full of knowledge,
para, transcendental to material conditions, dhate, accepts, asau, that, atma, or living being, atmana, of the self, lingam, a body, mayaya, by the material energy, visrijan, creating, gunan, various material qualities. Translation. The spirit soul, the living entity, has no death, for he is eternal and inexhaustible. Being free from material contamination, he can go anywhere in the material or spiritual worlds. He is fully aware and completely different from the material body, but because of being misled by misuse of his slight independence, he is obliged to accept subtle and gross bodies created by the material energy and thus be subjected to so-called material happiness and distress. Therefore, no one should lament for the passing of the spirit soul from the body. Purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami, Srila Prabhupada. Hiranyakashipu very intelligently described the position of the soul. The soul is never the body, but is always completely different from the body. Being eternal and inexhaustible, the soul has no death. But when the same pure soul desires to enjoy the material world independently, he is placed under the conditions of material nature and must therefore accept a certain type of body and suffer the pains and pleasures thereof. This is also described by Krishna in Bhagavad Gita 13:22. Karanam gunasangosya sad asat yoni janmashu, which is a different verse. The living entity is born in different families or species of life because of being infected by the modes of material nature. When conditioned by material nature, the living entity must accept a certain type of body, which is offered by nature under the direction of the Supreme Lord. Ishvara sarva bhutanam hridheshe arjuna tishtati. Brahmanam sarvabhutani yantra rudrani mayaya. The Supreme Lord is situated in everyone's heart, O Arjuna, and is directing the wanderings of all living entities who are seated as on a machine made of the material energy, Bhagavad Gita 18:61. The body is just like a machine, and according to the living entity's karma, he is offered a particular type of machine to move here and there under the control of material nature. This continues until he surrenders to the Supreme Personality of God, Godhead, mam eva ye prapadyante mayam etam tarantite. Until he surrenders, the conditioned soul is carried from life to life by the arrangement of material nature. Nama om Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prestaya Bhutale Srimati Bhakti Vedanta Swaminiti Namane Namaste Saraswati Devi Gauravani Pacharane Nirashesa Sunyavadi Paschachadesitarne. Mukam koriti vachalam bhangam langayate grim yat kripa tvam aham vande shiguru dainataranam. So this verse sounds like a typical Sunday feast lecture at your local Hare Krishna temple. But there's only one catch to this. We look at the seventh canto, chapter 2. We see the title. It says, Hiranyakashipu, King of the Demons. So Hiranyakashipu, King of the Demons, is speaking. And he's speaking because his brother has gotten killed. And he's preaching to his family members, don't lament. After all, he's a spirit soul. Unfortunately, there's more to that realization than just the fact that one is a spirit soul. And Hiranyakashipu made the grand mistake of thinking that although they shouldn't lament after the death of his brother, they should definitely avenge his death, even to the point of trying to kill Krishna. But that's a very different story. So suffice it to say that judging from the fact that Hiranyakashipu is speaking this verse and knowing or hearing about the fact that Hiranyakashipu is the greatest of the demons and he was even out to kill Krishna, there must be more to it than what he says here. Because what he says here obviously wasn't sufficient to get him to the point of Krishna consciousness. So we're looking for that knowledge of who we are that will allow us to understand the full spectrum. Just knowing that we're spirit doesn't seem to be enough. If I asked, and I have asked in the past, what does a spirit soul look like? What is its form? How does it act? What does it do? Very often, even people who accept that they're spiritual by nature have no idea of the answers to those questions. They have no idea what the spirit soul looks like. Matter of fact, they consider spirit to be some ethereal, light, shapeless kind of glow that emanates into the ether. And that's a problem. Because if you think that way, if you consider that at the time of death or the time of the leaving of this body, you're just an amorphous spiritual glow, then a lot of things could happen that, or a lot of thoughts about what could happen could occur to you, which would not be correct. So let's go back a little bit and look at Hiranyakashipu, what he does describe, what he does say accurately. he does say that the living entity creates his karma by his activities in this world. So a lot of us wear T-shirts that say karma free lunch and advertising Krishna lunch. We tell people if you eat prasadam, if you do devotional service, then your activity is karma free. But for 99.9% of the people, and maybe even for us part of the time, or some of us part of the time, we're creating karmic activity. We're creating reactions for behaviors that we do. And not all those reactions are seen by us in our present sojourn in the material world. Sometimes they're manifest in the future. Sometimes it's compared to like a bag of mustard seeds. Mustard seeds are very small. If anybody, if you've worked with mustard seeds, the bag is kind of funny because they have a kinetic energy and they kind of shoot all over the place within the bag. So, but they're very, very small, so you can get a lot of mustard seeds in a very small bag. So we have kilograms, pounds and pounds, tons and tons of mustard seeds in a bag of karma that we carry around with us wherever we go. And each lifetime, a handful of those mustard seeds is dispersed with us to create another material body and direct the wanderings of us through that particular sojourn. It creates for us inclinations, in other words, what we like, what we don't like, what we're inclined to do, what we're not inclined to do. It also creates for us our aguna, what mode of nature we're born in, what proclivities we have, what type of body we get, whether we're very strong or weak or tall or short or black or white, whether we're rich, whether we're famous, whether we're infamous, whether we're born in America or India. All these things are packed into those little teeny mustard seed that we carry in our bag. So the body that we get is due to those karmas that have been accumulated for many, many lifetimes, for years together. When we come in contact with a spiritual master and we take initiation, the spiritual master takes that bag and he holds on to it for us. Whether we get it back or not is kind of up to us. But we'll go there later. So here we are, we're getting a body and it's due to our past activities, both sinful and pious. Sometimes we're afraid of bad karma, but we think we embrace good karma. But good karma is also bad. Now, how is that? If I do something nice and I get a nice reaction, that should be good. No? No. Because any karma, good or bad, puts us here in a material body. Puts us here in a material body. So as Hiranyakashipu rightly says, we're spiritual by nature. He doesn't, however, venture into what that means. So let's stop there, that we're spiritual by nature and we're temporarily incarcerated. We're incarcerated in a machine, which Prabhupada brings up in his purport. We're incarcerated in a machine, Yantra Rudrani Maya. It's a yantra. It's a machine which is restrictive, right? If I want to fly, I have to go buy a ticket. I have to go through all kinds of stuff, take my shoes off and get patted down and have them go through my luggage and go through a scanner and stand like this. And then I get on a plane and maybe the plane is late. More likely than not, the plane is late. And then I get there, my luggage is not there. So many complications. Thanks. So many complications. Just talking about it upsets me. I'm going to do it in 2 days. So many complications are there because I want to fly. But the bird, right, he just decides he wants to fly and off he goes, right? He's flying in every direction. He's flying from continent to continent. In just a few months, we'll see migrations of birds all over the place, people heading north, people heading south, all kinds of different species of birds, and they don't have any problem flying, right? If I want to swim, then I got to be really careful, watch the wave warnings, make sure that I know how to swim, make sure there's no jellyfish in the ocean, make sure that a hurricane isn't coming. If I want to go down to in scuba diving, it's even more complicated. I got to carry tanks on my back and wear a wetsuit and all this stuff. Plus, I have to have a string so I don't get lost and die in there. But a fish, no problem. A fish can just swim. So this body that I have restricts me, because even the fish can swim, it can't fly. Even the bird can fly, it can't swim. And I can't do either. Right? And even if I have to lift something heavy, I have to get a big, strong guy to pick it up, because I'm a weakling. And if I want to do something nurturing, I have to get in touch with my female counterpart. So all in all, our bodies are limiting. They're very limiting. And worse than the worst limitation is they die. They come to a point where they don't function anymore, and eventually they die. And sometimes the dysfunctionality happens even before the death. And some even consider it worse than the death. When I was just talking, that as you get older, your ability to do things becomes so severely curtailed that you start to think it would be better to just get out of this body. This body is not doing what I want it to do anymore. But it's not your choice. You don't have the opportunity in most cases to choose when you want to leave. So you just wait, sometimes quite impatiently, for the body to allow the soul to leave. And this is where Hiranyakashipu's lesson ends. Because Hiranyakashipu doesn't know what happens to the soul when the soul leaves the body. And that's a big question. Because if the soul is a spiritual, it's a spark of spirit, well, it could disappear, right? It could just disappear after it leaves the body. After all, it's encaged, and if the cage is open, then the bird flies free, and it can go, it could just disappear into the sunset. That's kind of the Buddhist philosophy, that there is no life after death. Once you've gotten yourself free from material desire, you no longer need a material encagement, off you go, into the disappear. You don't exist anymore. Okay, so that's one mistake. The other possibilities, another possibility for mistake is that you merge into the supreme conglomeration of spirit souls. And so that light joins the totality of light, and it becomes one big light. But you lose your identity. You lose your individuality, and you just disappear. Now, that may appear to have some perks, right? Because if you consider how much of your suffering is caused by being an individual, right? All the broken hearts you had in relationships, and the fact that other people you loved and knew died, and then you have to go to school and you have a nasty teacher, and you know, so many things happen that make us think, boy, it would be nice to just be a non-entity. Just a non-entity. So that's another idea that could occur to somebody. If you hear, I'm spirit, that means when the body is finished, then I merge into the totality of spirit, and I'm just a spirit, whatever spirits do. So I'm just there. Another thought, and even a worse thought, is that, hey, actually, I'm the Supreme Spirit. It's just because I'm in the material body that I have a misconception. I'm thinking that I have limits, but really those limits are just a hallucination. I'm unlimited. And not only am I an unlimited, but I'm perfect, powerful, and I'm the Supreme. That was the route that Hiranyakashipu took. He thought, I'll become God. If I can't become God, then at least I'll become God-like in the sense that I won't have any restrictions, I won't have any limitations, I'll be eternal, I'll be powerful, and I'll be able to get everything I want just by wanting it. So this is the final snare. Prabhupada calls it the last snare of nescience, that when we think, because I'm spirit, actually I'm the Supreme Spirit. And when the body is finished, I become one with God and I realize my godness. Right now I just forgot my godness. And therefore I have to go to the bathroom, and therefore my teeth fall out, and therefore my hair falls out, and therefore I can't see or hear properly, and therefore sometimes I get miserable. But that's just temporary. When I get to the eternal constitutional position of my spiritual realization, then I realize that actually I'm God, and I'm perfect, powerful, and happy. So once I get to that position, then I think that I've gotten it, but actually at that position, I'm the most far from where I want to be. Because if I think that I'm God, then I won't worship God. And that's actually the constitutional position of the spirit soul. When Lord Chaitanya was asked, who are you? He didn't say, I'm a spirit soul. Although sometimes he mentioned that he was a spiritual being. But he said, Gopi Bharta Kamalayor Dasa Dasa Anudasa. He said, I'm not a Brahmin, a Kshatriya, a Vaishya, a Sudra. I'm just a servant of the servant of the servant of the one who all the gopis serve. And the one who serves all the gopis. That's who I am. I'm a servant of God. And I'm a servant of his servants. So that's actually who I am. Nitya Swarup Hoy Krishnadas. I'm Krishnadas. I'm the servant of Krishna. But if I think I'm Krishna, or I think I'm going to lose my individual nature, I'm going to disappear, then how can I serve Krishna? How can I realize that serving nature? So that's a big problem. And this is the crux of the problem that Hiranyakashipu had. And this is the crux of the problem that so many spiritualists have. That even though they understand they're spiritual, they don't understand what they're supposed to do as a spiritual being, what it means to be a spiritualist, what it means to be a spirit soul, what is the constitutional position of a spiritual being. So by Srila Prabhupada's grace and the mercy of the Bhagavatam and other Vedic literatures, we have some understanding of who we are and what we're supposed to do in that position. Right? Prabhupada gives the example that if a very rich person has a bout of amnesia and that child or that young person is wandering around the streets and he doesn't remember his family, he doesn't remember his wealth, he doesn't remember where to go home, he's just wandering around the street, he's lost. So someone comes over, sees him and says, I know who you are. You're the son of so-and-so. He's a very rich man. You have a home. You have a family. They're looking all over for you. They are anxious to have you back. And so let me take you and bring you back to your father so he can help you to get your memory clear. So that person has done the greatest service because not only recognizing the lost nature of the person, but the real nature of the person. The natural position of the person. Let me take you home. Let me introduce you to your family. Let me lead you on the path which will bring you back to recalling where you're supposed to be, who you're supposed to be. So this is the position of the devotees, that they wander the earth. Srila Prabhupada literally wandered the earth. He wandered the earth from India all the way to New York City and came specifically to inform us that who you are is more than just what you're not. So we understand what we're not. We're not a material body. We're not destined to be in here. And even that itself is not such an easy realization. We think, I know, I'm not that body. We can say it. I can introduce you to children who are 1 and 2 years old who can tell you that they're not this body. And they can say it with quite the conviction until they get cut or hit or hurt or someone takes their Lego set away. And then they begin to cry because although they can say they're not that body and maybe even intellectually they know they're not that body, the realization that you're not that body is something that happens down the line. It's something that happens by revelation. By realization from within. Krishna says he's sitting within our heart. And when he sees our sincere desire to know who we are, our sincere desire to understand the goal of life, then from within the heart, he reveals to us who we are. And we get a realization, an understanding. In education, they call it an aha moment, when the light goes on, you know, that figurative light bulb that sits in your head. That light goes on, and you understand, oh, that's what it means when I'm not that body. I have a personal experience because my son, when he was 16 years old, he fell out of a tree, and he broke his neck at C4-5. So his body, although he's still in it, and it still works enough to be functional to some degree, it's very much not functional, right? It's very much a burden. It's like riding an old jalopy, or not even riding an old jalopy. It's like a jalopy that's stuck in the garage. It can't even drive. You can't even get it to start. Kuti and I were looking for a mobile home. We have the idea of starting a traveling temple in South Florida, or Little South Florida. And so we were looking for a motorhome, and we read one ad. It said, runs great in the lot. So we were thinking, well, what does that mean, runs great in the lot? It means that if you turn it on, it'll make a sound like it's going, but it doesn't go anywhere. That's what my son's body is like. He can't walk. He can't use his hands. He can't use his legs. He can't use any of his body except from here up. So he can speak. He can think. He's a very thoughtful person. He's a great artist. But he can't use his body. His body is there, but it's not functional. So if all of us, if we have an experience like that, then we can have a profound understanding that we're something else. When you meet that person, you understand that person is something else, because the body doesn't work, right? It's just an outer covering. But inside the body, there's a soul. If the soul leaves, the body falls flat. It dies. And yet we have it there. We have it there sometimes on display, right? You go to a funeral, and it's sitting there on display, and they make it up, and they put flowers all around it and make it look. But there's something missing. And even though people out of duty very often, more often than not, go there and pay their respects to that body, they can't wait to get out of there. It's not like they're going to have a party in there and stay in there for a long time. They go in there, they shed some tears, they offer some eulogy, and then they're gone. And the body is also gone. Let's put it away. Let's bury it or burn it, because it starts to smell bad. And it doesn't do any of the things that endeared it to us when the soul was in it. So we can look within our sphere of function, and we can find indications that will reinforce this understanding that we are not that body. However, even if we understand we're not that body, if we don't understand who we are, if we don't understand what we're supposed to do, that realization will be very flickering. It will come and will go. Maybe I've told you before, but I'm going to tell you again, and there's some people here who've never heard, Narada Muni many times has the job of helping people to understand that they're not that body in a very realistic way, and helping them to understand the law of karma, that what they do will cause another body, and they'll keep transmigrating in bodies that they're not indefinitely. That's a problem. So in one particular case, he had a disciple named Kailash, and he said to Kailash, okay, now you're older, your children are married, why don't you come with me and just take up the process of self-realization? Now, theoretically, Kailash, he was studying the Vedas. He already knew about the philosophy, I'm not this body, I'm spirit soul. And because Narada is a very good spiritual master, he knew he was a servant of Krishna. But he said to Narada something we often say, well, not yet, right? I have so much to do. And this stuff, it's later. When I'm about to die, I'll take it up. And so his life passed in so many different ways. He said he had to take care of his children, make sure they didn't ruin the business, and he stayed around. Narada would come and check up on him periodically, but again and again he would say, no, not yet. I still have something to do. My grandchildren, I have to help them. I don't want my kids to squander the earnings. I want them to raise their children properly. Finally, Narada came, and Kailash was no longer. He knocked on the door, asked for him, and Kailash's children said, oh, Kailash, he passed away. So Narada thought, oh, well, he'll have to take birth again, and who knows where he is in this vast material world. He could be anywhere. But then he heard barking. Hello, it's me, Kailash. Urf, urf. Kailash, you're a dog? Yes. I took birth as a dog because this neighborhood is deteriorated. It's dangerous here. And my kids and my grandkids, they need protection. So I've come as a dog, and I'm going to protect them now. Okay? You sure? You know, I'm Narada Muni. I have mystic powers. I can assist you in your spiritual life. I can make an exception in your case. You can go back to your constitutional position as servant of Krishna. No, I have to take care of this business. So he remained as a dog. Next time Narada came back, dog had passed away. Again, he thought, oh, this is terrible. Now who knows where he is? But as he was walking through the garden, through the paddy fields, he heard a snake. Narada, it's me. So, Kailash, that's you, a snake? Yes, I took birth as a snake to protect the paddy fields. My kids, they're so stupid. They don't get up early enough to harvest in time, so the animals get all the paddy, and people come and steal the paddy, so I took birth as a big snake to assist. Narada thought, this is enough. So he called the family. There's a big snake in your garden. Okay, so they came out, they saw the snake, they started beating it, beating it, beating it. Kailash said, okay, I get it. I'll go back now. So the material world is like that. It's always training us up. It's always beating us, and it's always training us up. But we don't get it. We don't get it. And there's so many stories in our scripture of great persons, really advanced devotees, people who knew about the purpose of human life, who still didn't really understand that they weren't that body. And so they got enamored. They got enamored by wealth. They got enamored by education. They got enamored by beauty or the attraction to the opposite sex. And so they thought, well, I know that ultimately I'm a spirit soul, but it's not so bad here. Right? It's not so bad here. I got a nice house. I got a good car. I just won the lottery. I've got some money. I've got nice friends. We have to be so careful. Because actually the material world is dukkhalayam ashashvatam, and we have to remember it. We have to remember that it's temporary, and it's ultimately going to be the cause of letdown. We're ultimately going to feel dissatisfied with whatever toys we have, with whatever enjoyment we have. It's going to leave something missing. So when we're in this body, we have to make the best use of it. We should do the best we can to be a good servant of Krishna and the devotees and make our lives peaceful and comfortable. But we should never forget what Hiranyakashipu forgot. Hiranyakashipu, he was on the ultimate upward mobility, right? He got so wealthy. His whole city was made of gold. Actually, his name, Hiranyakashipu. Hiranya means gold. Kashipu means soft bed. So that gives you some insight into his consciousness, what he was thinking about, what he was valuing, gold and soft bed. So we have to be careful that we don't get so enamored. Hiranyakashipu got so enamored with power, with money, with women, that he completely forgot. Or maybe, yeah, he completely forgot. Because actually he was a devotee in his previous life, but that's a whole other story. But he completely forgot the goal of human life. And actually it's explained in the Shastra that we, as individual living entities, we may understand what we're not. We may actually come to understand that we're not this body. But we can't understand what we are without a spiritual master. We can't understand that we're servants of God, that the purpose of human life is to serve him, to love him, that's where our happiness lies. Hiranyakashipu accumulated more wealth than we could ever accumulate, even if we won 50 million lotteries. And yet he was still hankering for more. He had so many women, but he was still looking for more. And that's what got him in trouble. Always hankering, always looking for more material wealth, more power, more worshipers, more anything material that appears to give a sense gratification, never satisfied. What am I looking for? What is it that will fill that hole in my heart? Huh? We keep throwing things in it, cars in it, iPods in it, so many things we throw in that hole in our heart. But nothing fills it up. And we're never really satisfied until we come to that point of understanding that we have a loving relationship with Krishna. And when we cultivate that loving relationship with Krishna, then everything else takes on new meaning. It's not that everything else has to disappear or we have to throw everything out the window and all become monks and go up into the Himalayas and meditate. We don't have to do that. We don't even have to come into the Hare Krishna temple and become monks and meditate. You have to close that door because the echo feedback is not so good. Thank you. But that hole in the heart becomes satisfied by that loving relationship to Krishna. So we can have so many zeros, but without that one, without that loving relationship with Krishna, without understanding that eternal position of being a servant of God, without understanding that reciprocation, that quintessence of reciprocation with the Supreme Personality of Godhead, we're destined to feel dissatisfied. And if you look around the material world, you see that even persons with fantastic education, fantastic facility, we look at their facility and we think, oh, I wish I had fill in the blank. Right? I wish I had a car like that. I wish I had a house like that. I wish I had a wife like that. I wish I had education like that. I wish he has such a good memory. I wish I could have memory like that. And as soon as you wish, you create another body. As soon as that sentence starts, I wish I could, Krishna says, okay, you can. Go for it. And you get another body. So don't wish for anything but an eternal loving relationship with Krishna, because that desire will drive you to kind of past all the material allurements, kind of past all the road signs. You know, when you drive on I-75, you see so many road signs. Everybody's telling you, buy this, eat this, enjoy this, live here, retire here, look like this forever. So we drive past those road signs, and only someone who's with a weak mind, he gets off and he checks it out and he thinks of buying. He goes to the amusement park. He plays the game. My daughter was just telling me she went to some place called Lego City in California. $79 for each person. There's four people in her family. Do the math. And they were totally disappointed. The children were too short. They weren't allowed to go on the rides. But hundreds of people go to these places, right? Hundreds of people stand on lines for hours at Disneyland and all these places looking for happiness, thinking that when I get to the end of the line, I'm going to get on this silly ride for 3 minutes and it's going to cost me $300 or $500 or $1,000 that I'm going to have to pay back for God knows how long because I put it on my credit card, so now it's $2,000. And then I'm going to be happy. When I ride on this ride for 3 minutes, then I'm going to be happy. Doesn't it sound stupid? When we talk about it, it sounds stupid, but people are doing it every day, thousands of people, not just one or two. Thousands of people are doing it, running down there, flying from England, flying from Spain, flying from France to come here and go on these rides to find happiness. And we're on another ride. So we have to be careful that we don't go on another ride, that we don't get enamored by material sense gratification, and that we just keep our intelligence focused. In the Bhagavad Gita, vyasikatmika buddhir, one-pointed intelligence. On the order of the spiritual master, I understand my eternal relationship with the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and I don't want to take a detour. I don't want to go check out Lego City, or they have another one, Car City, you know, the movie Cars. So they've created a city with all the cars. It completely bewildered my grandson, because my grandson, he likes that car movie. So then he went and all of a sudden it was all real. All the cars were there and all the so-called people were there, and it was like, how does this work? So this is us. We're in cars. All of us, Yantarudrani Mayayar, literally means the material body is like an automobile. It's like a chariot, huh? And we're the driver. So where are we going to drive it? That's up to us. And so knowing that the purpose of human life is to not only to understand that we're not this body, but to deeply understand that the happiness we're seeking, we're pleasure seekers. When Prabhupada came here, he was asked, what have you come for? Prabhupada said, to make them happy. I've come to make them happy. Everyone is looking for happiness, just looking in the wrong place. So Prabhupada came here to give us real happiness, and that real happiness lies in our relationship with the Supreme Personality of Godhead, putting that one in front of the zeros. So we can have education, we can have wealth, we can have so many things, but if we don't have Krishna, then we'll leave this world unsatisfied. And that lack of satisfaction will cause the I wish syndrome. The I wish syndrome causes another body. So if we want to stop this cycle of birth and death, we have to come to the point of wanting only a relationship with the Supreme Personality of Godhead. When we have that desire strongly, then our path becomes very clear. Our path becomes focused, and we can go there without detour. Now, the path is given to us by our previous acharyas and by our present teachers in spiritual life is very simple. But it's only simple if we stick to it, if we fix our mind on it, if we add it with dedication to our lives. And that process of chanting Hare Krishna very, very attentively, very, very carefully, not just casually, because I was noticing in the material world more and more things are becoming automated. I was musing at the automatic car wash. Right, there's an automatic car wash when you come. I don't remember the name of it anyway. Something beach car wash, but here there used to be a car wash, right on the corner over here, and it even still says 24/7 open, but it's not open. It's closed and it's abandoned, and so we made an automated one, and now all the people that were involved and had jobs and stuff who were working in that car wash, they're out of employment. And when you go to Lowe's, for instance, now they have automatic checkout, and you just scan your stuff, and the thing tells by weight that your things are there. And so the only people who get jobs are the people who work in computers. Everybody else is out of a job. So we automate everything. We can't automate our chanting of Hare Krishna. We have to be very, very careful that it doesn't become like so many other things in our lives, that we just multitask it into automatonness, right? Automatonness, that we act like robots, and that then the chanting of the Hare Krishna just becomes another thing that we do every day, and we just turn it on for a certain amount of time. We spin the beads through our hands. We get the mantra of some reasonable facsimile thereof out of our mouth, and then we put them down and go about the real business of life. No, because the real business of life is hearing the holy name, chanting the holy name, and serving the devotees. Taking the time to realize that we're a servant. In this material world, being a servant is not a very reputable position. No one wants to be a servant. Everyone wants to be the boss. But in the spiritual world, the boss is Krishna. And by serving him, we become happy. And by serving his servants, we become even happier, because Krishna becomes happier when we serve his servants. So taking the position of a servant is a very laudable position in the spiritual world. Even in the path going back to Godhead, being the servant of the servant is a very laudable position. And chanting the holy name is a very specially crafted process of self-realization designed specifically for this day and this age. This time when everything is automated, where everything is mechanized, where everything is meaningless, where everything is all one, Krishna gave us the holy name. Where there's so many distractions, people calling you every minute of every day to do something else with your time except what matters, the holy name comes out as a shining light. In the Bhagavatam, it's described like the sun has arisen to dissipate the darkness. The knowledge in the Bhagavatam and the chanting of the holy name has arisen to give us light in the dark age of Kali so that we can go back to Godhead. It's so made so easy by Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and Srila Prabhupada and the acharyas that if we don't take it up, think how foolish it is that we have this golden opportunity. We're here. We're already in the Association of Devotees. We're taking prasadam. We know, at least intellectually, we know. So now we have to act on it. And first we act on it because we know, and then we act on it because we understand. So the understanding will come by the practice. And so who we are, that's the topic, who am I? Who am I? I'm a servant of Krishna. I'm a spirit soul, and the pinnacle of achievement for that spirit soul is at Krishna's lotus feet as a servant. And I'll stop there, and if there's any questions. Yes.
I just had a comment.
Yes.
A few years ago, I was in Poland, on the Polish shore.
Uh-huh.
A few years ago, I was on the Polish tour, and the devotees were really tired. It was getting near the end of the month or two that we were there, and it was Harinam time, and Indradumna Swami was having a little ishtagoshi with all of us, like, and you could see that everybody's tired and, you know, physically exhausted. And he said, instead of thinking about your physical state right now, just think about how your soul is crying out for the mercy of Lord Chaitanya. It's hankering so much for that mercy. Mm. And I still think of that sometimes when I'm feeling like, oh, my body's getting kind of interfering with what I really want, and I think about my soul really wanting it, and it sort of helps.
Uh-huh. Jai, thank you for that. Yes, Hare Krishna.
I just, I remember you mentioned that we might be able to realize that we're not this body, you know, and that we're spirit souls, but that to really, truly realize our eternal relationship with Krishna, we have to have a spiritual master.
And I was wondering, know, actually, the point is that we can come to understand that we're spirit,
right,
but we can't understand our relationship with Krishna without a spiritual master.
I was just wondering if you could speak on that a little bit more.
We go through the process of what I'm not, right? We look at this body. We look at even the examples we give to help us understand that we're spirit soul. Those examples are based on what we're not. Touch your head, touch your hair, touch your arm, touch your who. This is my arm. This is my head. This is my body. Where are you? Oh, I don't know. Where am I? I'm a spirit soul. So by eliminating. We understand the body is there, what left, the soul. If we work in the ER, in the emergency room, we see so many people dying, and we get the picture there's something more. And so there's a soul. So we can come to the realization of soul by just looking at the material world carefully, scrutinizingly, and understanding what we're not. But to come to the realization that we're servants of Krishna, how are you going to come to that on your own? Unless you come in contact, either by reading or somehow you come in contact with someone who has an information coming down to help you understand that there's a reality beyond your present perception. I had a girl once in my class. So I had a girl in my class, and she was diagnosed that she needed glasses. Now, for a 12-year-old teenage girl in America, that's like a fate worse than death. So she wouldn't wear glasses. Her mother took her. She got glasses, but she kept accidentally on purpose breaking them. She would drop them in the parking lot. She'd step on them. So many things, she'd break them. So finally, on the plea of her now becoming bankrupt mother, I convinced her that she could wear her glasses to Mangal Arati, because Mangal Arati is at 4:30 in the morning and no one she cared about would be there anyway, so she could wear her glasses. So she agreed to wear her glasses. So she came to Mangal Arati, and when she came to Mangal Arati with her glasses on, she saw things that she had never seen before. She saw the deity so carefully. She saw that Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur was wearing glasses. Oh, my God, he's wearing glasses. And she saw all the paintings on the walls in the temple. She was like Alice in Wonderland, you know. But she was going to the temple every day. But without glasses, she didn't know what she couldn't see. She had to have glasses to be able to see what she was missing. Huh? So we're like that. We don't know what we don't know. And until we get somebody to help us understand what we don't know, how do we know we don't know it? That's why we need a spiritual master. You're welcome. Hare Krishna. Yes.
If we want to be a servant of the service, should we also be like accepting of the material world and be serving while we are here? Because in the Gita, in chapter 10, verse 4, it says that the material world should be accepted without attachment or aversion.
Yeah, so that's definitely the case, and we definitely have to serve while we're in the material world. That's what she's doing now, right?
That's what I feel is like a big problem. It's like a lot of people are like, "Oh no, I don't. The material world is inferior. I don't want to be here." And they end up not really doing anything here while they're here because they're kind of avoiding it.
Well, there's a very important part of our philosophy given to us by Rupa Goswami, which is called Yukta Vairagya. Yukta Vairagya means using everything in Krishna's service. So we have to be careful because sometimes we start using something in Krishna's service and then we start using it in our service and then we get enamored, we get carried away. So we have to keep checking in, you know, to make sure that we're using it in Krishna's service and we're not becoming sidetracked. But at the same time, we have to use everything in Krishna's service. And one who is expert in devotional service is expert in using everything in Krishna's service. Srila Prabhupada used everything in Krishna's service. His contemporaries in Vrindavan were like, oh my gosh, you're going to go to America, sannyasi, shouldn't go to America, shouldn't have anything to do with women, shouldn't, you know, open temples, big temples, so much money, you're going to fall down, you're going to go across the ocean, sannyasi never supposed to go across the ocean, you should just stay in the Holy Land. But Prabhupada, he didn't listen to them because he knew that for being the servant, for being Krishna's servant, he could do anything. And so he did exactly the opposite. He got on a boat, he came to America, he used everything in Krishna's service, ultimately even, you know, dictaphones and tape recorders and cars and telephones and so many things. But there's a downside if you're not careful. Just like we can use Facebook to preach. Huh? We can use Facebook to preach. Many devotees use Facebook to preach. But you could lose half your life, maybe all your life, on Facebook. Right? And you get to thinking that you're living in a virtual reality. Instead, you're bad enough you're living in a virtual reality, but then you live in a virtual reality within the virtual reality. That's even worse. So you have to be careful. You have to check yourself because you see the positive is there. But the negative is also there. And the more we get involved with the material energy, the more the chance that we'll get caught in the labyrinth. So it's just like I once by my house, around the corner, just before the exit, I-75, there's some entrances to some caves where you can go scuba diving. They're underneath Sony's and a couple of other buildings there. And I never even knew they were there. Now they're closed off. But one year, a few years ago, we drove by, there were tons of cop cars there. Tons of cop cars there. So what had happened is two divers had gone down and gone into the caves, there's caverns, and they couldn't get out. So they lost their way and they couldn't get out and they died because they ran out of air. And they had written in the book, so they found some recording of their last moments in life and how they were trying to get out. And, you know, then all kinds of information came. You should have a string and you should tie it and blah, 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 all these things. But the thing is that you go in and you think you're finding enjoyment and maybe if it's even purposeful. But if you don't know how to get out and you're not constantly aware of the exit strategy, you could get trapped. So both things have to be there. Is that okay? Krishna. Anybody else? Yes, Tulsi Rani, Devi Dasi.
This is kind of related.
Yeah, give her. This is kind of related.
It's kind of related because it talks about the transmigration of the soul. But I read yesterday in the Bhagavatam on the concept about how if we don't finish off our spiritual, you know, if we don't perfect ourselves spiritually in this lifetime, then it carries over to the next lifetime, however advanced we are in this lifetime. Mm-hmm. And I've heard that concept so many times. Mm-hmm. For the first time, I thought about it in a different way, and I was thinking, well, wait, but whatever advancement I have in this life, it's really not my advancement. It's really only the mercy I've received from the devotees and from the spiritual master. So in my next, if you know, it seems like a lot to perfect in this one lifetime. And if I don't make it in this lifetime and I have to take birth again, is it really going to be, where would I really start? Because right now I might seem spiritually advanced, but it's only, I know it's not my spiritual advancement.
Well, it is your spiritual advancement. It may not be by your power, but it's still yours. If I chant, like if I pray for you or I chant, you know, sometimes we offer our rounds to somebody who's suffering in the hospital. I was just reading one story about somebody who needed to have a son, you know, one of those kings who needed to have a son, and he wasn't having a son, and it turns out that he had committed an offense on some codicil by something, or, I know, he had committed an offense, and the priests, they found out that what the offense was by their mystic power, and they were advised to undergo some austerity on this certain codicil and then give the merit to that king, and then he would be able to have a child. So by the mercy of the spiritual master, by the mercy of the devotees, we make spiritual advancement. It's not that it's not ours. It's not that they you know, let us use it for a while. It's on loan. We have to pay it back with interest. It's actually a gift. And that gift is ours to use. And that should be more of an impetus to move forward, because we don't want to waste that gift. If someone gives me a gift of something very precious and then I break it into millions of pieces, then I've wasted that gift. So I have this gift. This gift is mine. It was given to me, not only, it was given to me by Prabhupada, but it was also given to me by hundreds and hundreds and hundreds and thousands of other devotees. What to speak of Krishna and Radharani and Krishna and Balaram and Lord Jagannath and God knows how many other sacred places and things that I've come in contact with by Prabhupada's mercy. So the gift of advancement is there, and I get the privilege of taking birth with that merit, with that level of spiritual acumen. However, as soon as I enter the material world, Maya is at war with me, with the spirit soul. Maya is there, and she says, okay, you didn't make it last life because you have all these material attachments. Let's see if you're going to get rid of them this life. And immediately, the opportunities for falling down enter into... Bhaktivinoda Thakur describes it at the very birth. You know, you're laying there in the cradle, and everyone's going, oh, you're such a cutie. Oh, he's going to be a doctor, isn't he? He's so cute. You know, he's going to be the star of our family, and everybody's, you know, praising you, and everybody's loving you. And from that moment on, you start losing your spiritual awareness. You know, in the womb, you're praying, let me out of here, I'll be good, I promise. And as soon as you get hit with the material energy is a challenge. So we pray for the ability to make it back to Godhead in this lifetime, but we also understand that the acharyas will come and they'll assist us. I was just reading this morning, maybe yesterday, last night, another a story of Narada where, it was a king. Akrura was telling the story, a devotee Akrura was telling the story about a king who his spiritual master had promised him, if you don't make it in this life, then I'll come back and I'll help you in your next life. So this... I'll drag you back. We have the story of Chintamani with Bilvan Mangal Thakur, that the acharyas say that Chintamani was a prostitute, but his spiritual master spoke to him through her. And this other emperor, he was very arrogant, and some beggar appeared before him and said, I want something. He said, I'll give you whatever you want. He said, you should be careful before you say that to me. He said, no, I'm an emperor. I have so many things. I'll give you whatever you want. He said, okay, I want you to fill this bowl. It was a little bowl. The emperor was like, are you kidding? You want me to fill that bowl? Okay, bring money and bring the money, put it in the bowl. As soon as the money touched the bowl, it disappeared. And they kept putting so many things in the bowl. And the bowl, everything that went in the bowl would disappear. So finally the king said, listen, I'll lose everything. I'll lose my wealth. I might lose my treasury. I'll lose everything, but I will not be defeated by you. And so he put everything in that bowl, the deed to the kingdom, everything, and everything disappeared. And the beggar was just sitting there smiling. because the beggar was his spiritual master, and he had come back to show him something. And so finally he asked him, I just have one question, what's this bowl made out of? And he said, the same thing your mind is made out of, that no matter what you put in it, it never is enough. So our spiritual master is there for us. He'll help us. The devotees will help us. But we also have to help ourselves. It's, you know, it's a two-way street. If we stop helping ourselves, they'll sit back like the super soul and wait until an opportune moment, and then they'll come in and give us some clue, but we also have to take up the process. But our spiritual advancement is ours.